this one. Tell me, are you locked in the punt? Andy, are you goofing on Elvis?
Hey, baby, are we losing touch? Troubled by the horrible ass. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Charles Darwin had the golden ass. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the punt? Hey, Andy, are you goofing on Elvis?
Hey, baby, are you having fun? A little ghost for the offering. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
America was once the number one manufacturing economy in the world. Now we're in 10th place. But it's not just a business concern. Manufacturing's vital for our nation's independence and innovation.
How we could revive manufacturing, and what does that actually look like? There are so many compelling reasons why we should be manufacturing right here in the United States.
Then, diabetes affects one out of every nine Americans. An expert says treatments used today need to change.
The physician and the educators really should have a profound understanding of both these approaches. The eat the toxin, take the antidote approach, and the don't eat the toxin approach.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. Don't go away. InfoTrack comes your way right after this.
Getting your biggest tax refund from Jackson Hewitt can lead to some spirited reactions.
Jackson Hewitt, yeah!
Jackson Hewitt is so sure that you'll get your biggest refund that if they don't, you get your money back plus $100.
Jackson Hewitt, yeah!
And Jackson Hewitt also guarantees the accuracy of your return for life.
Hewitt, yeah!
So don't just sit there. For your biggest refund guaranteed, walk into a Jackson Hewitt today and dance out Jackson Hewitt, yeah!
At Progressive, we love sports and saving you money, so we bundled them together.
It's 40 love here in the third set.
And there's the bell. She's coming off the bench hot, looking for a quick knockdown. But wait, she's driving to the hoop. Oh, down goes the champ.
Now that's another double fault. She'll be shooting too. The serve is up. And here comes the left hook.
She's bundled her home and auto insurance with Progressive. Swish, ace, savings, TKO.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a three-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin. And over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and in rare cases fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
For decades, the USA was number one in the world when it came to manufacturing. Now we've fallen to 10th place. How can we get back on top? And why is it so important for our nation's future? InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco has the story. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Rachel Slade, author of Making It in America, The Almost Impossible Quest to Manufacture in the USA and How It Got That Way. She earned numerous literary awards for her previous works, including one that was adapted for a Harvard Business School case study. Ms. Slade, you report the U.S. is now the 10th largest manufacturing economy in the world, and we used to be number one. Many people probably shrug and say, well, that's just how things are in a global economy. But does it have to be that way?
It does not have to be that way, and that is why I wrote this book. I wanted to explore how we could revive manufacturing, and what does that actually look like when we revive manufacturing? But most importantly, the question is, why is it so important? And that is something that I hope my readers will dig into. There are so many compelling reasons why we should be manufacturing right here in the United States.
And yet, let's talk about that. You say the U.S. is now the third largest exporter of oil behind Saudi Arabia and Russia. How would exporting a greater variety of products, and not just raw materials, help the U.S.?
Well, I mean, before we even talk about exporting, I think we need to talk about stemming the importation tide. That's part of what I'm really talking about. Why don't we start making things for ourselves? Part of the reason I really think that this is important is because then we'll have a lot more negotiating power and uncompromised power on the international stage because we will be more independent. And that is exactly what George Washington and Alexander Hamilton set about to do, getting Americans manufacturing the goods that they needed so that we could be truly independent. That's what I am advocating for.
And of course, that takes workers, so let's start with them. To quote you, no doubt, the Great Resignation was fueled by anger and resentment against poorly managed companies where Americans felt exploited, underpaid, overworked, and dog-tired, unquote. Has any of that started to reverse with the revival of unions?
It's absolutely fascinating to watch. Absolutely. I am Gen X, and I'm noticing that the younger generation is very concerned about work-life balance, and they're finding answers in organizing. They are banding together, and they're asking for not necessarily more pay. They are asking for other things, like very much a four-day work week is something on everybody's mind, especially now that we've seen what that looks like in the pandemic, having a little more time to be able to do the kinds of things that you just need to get done during the week and not on the weekend. So it's really been amazing to watch this post-pandemic push from workers in all sectors just for more work-life balance and more dignity and more respect.
We're visiting with Rachel Slade, author of Making It in America, The Almost Impossible Quest to Manufacture in the USA and How It Got That Way. You've been quoted as saying that we can solve many problems by being inventive in how we produce goods. How so?
We have always been inventive. It's kind of funny to think that MIT, I'm from Boston, so MIT was actually created by people who made things. They were the innovators of their day. They were the industrialists. And so there are so many people right now in America who are really looking at robotics and AI and how that can help with manufacturing and logistics. And a lot of that technology is actually just being exported straight to other countries who are manufacturing powerhouses at the moment. This is the technology that we need here so that we can start to innovate further. So the idea is, if you make things, then you can innovate how you make things. If you have the designers and the programmers right next to the makers, they can inform each other. What I'm looking for, what we're all looking for, what we're all hoping for, is this incredible cross-pollination of ideas, people, makers, tech people, and financiers. That's what's going to help revive manufacturing in America.
Now, I'd like you to speak to the people who are afraid of AI, that is, artificial intelligence. Is AI a threat to people's jobs?
Jobs are going to change. And that's why we need to jump on this right now. That's why we really need to get people focusing on producing, creating, innovating in a very tangible way. Manufacturing, because that's where the future is. And AI is only there to help us. There are instances I can imagine where AI could be very frightening. I mean, especially if you're talking about on social media, the deep fakes. But generally speaking, AI is a tool like any other tool. And if it helps us build better, build smarter, manage better, and get things to your house, you know, in a timely fashion, then it's doing its job. That's what it was designed to do. It's designed to be a tool. Now we just need to figure out how to harness it.
So let's talk about what government can do. What about government assistance for technical training? And do we need a return to trade schools?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, here's the thing. I work with a lot of young people who are really interested in working in robotics. They spend a lot of time playing video games or even inventing their own games and their own apps. I mean, there are a lot of very innovative, creative people who are native digital learners, and they just haven't made the leap yet to turning all that ingenuity and know-how toward manufacturing. So that's one group. The other group are people who maybe just don't want to sit behind a desk or don't want to go through 4 years of college or can't afford to. And so if we start talking about like all of the skills required to develop manufacturing know-how starting in high school, we're going to have a workforce ready to take on these challenges.
Now, you call for incentives in manufacturing, and you make the point that American companies don't often mentor the next generation of managers and that poor management can lead employees to leaving. Expand on that.
I think in all sectors of the economy right now, we have this division, this class division, in many cases, where you have the manager class, they were trained strictly as managers, and then you have the worker class that's forever relegated to being in that class. And what's beautiful about a lot of manufacturing models is that they're taught from the ground up. So you come in with some skills and you learn every aspect of the trade. And if you prove to be effective within that sector, you can rise up the ladder. Traditionally, that is the model of manufacturing, is that you have people who are coming in who maybe don't have a lot of education, but they get their hands into every aspect of this incredible thing, which is producing a good, so that by the time they are managers, they really know what workers need. They're in tune to that. I think balancing that also is revitalizing unions, making sure that people who are working, who traditionally don't have power, can get together and have a voice, sit at the table, even sit on a board, have a union representative sit at a board, which is the German model, so that decisions at the top are made not just for shareholders, but also for stakeholders. And when I say stakeholders, I mean the workers. I mean the community in which the factory resides. I mean the people who are actually buying the products. Are they getting good products? These are the kinds of new ways of thinking. They're actually old ways of thinking that we are trying to revive.
Rachel Slade, author of Making It in America, thank you so much for joining us today and detailing your book.
It was a pleasure, Gina. Thank you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, do treatment options for diabetes need to be updated? That story, coming up.
Don't go away. InfoTrack will be back right after this.
At Progressive, we love sports and saving you money, so we bundled them together.
Top of the seventh looks like a pitching change as they've set up for a corner kick. The two black belts have entered the mat. And the slider is low and away. He heads the ball to midfield. This is quite a kumite. Here comes the roundhouse. Has it got enough gas to get out of here? Unbelievable! They've bundled their home and auto insurance with Progressive. Kick savings, pitch karate.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Go ahead, feel your engine. Admire that perfectly installed exhaust. Your vehicle's moving along this freeway like it was made from fresh installs and a whole lot of love. With eBay Motors, you get over 122 million parts to keep it running. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, they'll be the perfect fit every time. Plus, at these prices, well, we're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a three-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and, in rare cases, fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Diabetes affects one out of every nine Americans. Our next guest says the way we treat the disease needs to change. He's Gary Taubes, author of Rethinking Diabetes, What Science Reveals About Diet, Insulin, and Successful Treatments. Gary, you believe the experts on diabetes are on the wrong path, and you say it all began 102 years ago. What happened then?
Okay, well, research at the University of Toronto discovered the hormone insulin. There are two types of diabetes. There's an acute form that's a deficiency of this insulin, and it's very quickly fatal without therapy, and it strikes mostly children and adolescents. And then there's a chronic form that associates with obesity and age and is a disorder called insulin resistant. But in 1921, these physicians at the University of Toronto purified insulin from pancreases, and they used it to treat a 13-year-old with type 1 diabetes who was so near death his father had to carry him to his hospital bed, and this essentially brought him back to life, revived him. Since then, a disease that is an inability to, in effect, process the carbohydrate content of the diets we eat. So it is directly related to sort of how we eat and what we eat, has been perceived as a disease that's best treated by drugs. First insulin, and then these what are called oral hypoglycemic agents, pills you could take that lower your blood sugar. And now there's a whole new generation of these wonder drugs, Ozempic and Wegovy, that work by different mechanisms. And if you're diagnosed with diabetes today, you will have a better prognosis than ever before in history. But your doctor will still tell you, if they're being honest, it's a chronic progressive disease. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah, but you say it is not a progressive chronic disorder. So what is it if it's not that?
Well, there are two ways to treat this disorder. You want to control your blood sugar. That's the fundamental goal here. And you can control your blood sugar by taking these drugs, beginning with insulin in 1921. And it will not make you healthy, but it will delay and mitigate the poor health that you're experiencing. Or you can use diet to control your blood sugar. And as soon as you do that, now you're working into a world of sort of controversy about fad diets and what people will or will not eat and what's healthy and what's not.
Let's talk about that. What role in diabetes does the food industry play in all this?
Well, we're experiencing epidemic levels of diabetes. So by that, I mean, for instance, in the United States in 1960, when the first surveys were really being done, maybe 2 million Americans were diagnosed with diabetes. And today that number is 30 million, and another 8 to 9 million have the disorder but don't know it yet. So 1 in 9 Americans have a disease that was, in effect, vanishingly rare 200 years ago. So that's a problem, and something's driving that. And one explanation is we just eat too much. The diabetes epidemic has gone up coincident with an obesity epidemic, and obesity and type 2 diabetes are closely associated. So one explanation is we eat too much. Another is the food industry creates all these ultra-processed foods that we can't say no to. An explanation that I explored in my book, The Case Against Sugar, in 2016, is that it's sugar particularly, and maybe sugary beverages, that sort of trigger this disease in populations. And then once you've got it, the predisposition can be passed on through the womb in this process called fetal programming. But you can blame the food industry. I am more interested in the science and the problems that arose when physicians think they can do medical science as opposed to just treating patients, which is what you have in this 100-year history since insulin was discovered.
Our guest is Gary Taubes, author of Rethinking Diabetes, What Science Reveals About Diet, Insulin, and Successful Treatments. Gary, you're not a physician. Do you expect to get resistance from the medical community from your views in this book?
Yeah, and I should. Anytime a journalist comes along, not only I'm not a physician, and I do not live with a diabetes diagnosis myself. So nobody likes it when an outsider comes along and says, look, I've looked into what you're doing, and it looks like some terrible mistakes were made, and I'd like to talk to you about it. That's true everywhere in life. It's true for me as well. So yeah, I will get an enormous amount of resistance. Actually, the worst case scenario is that the diabetes community doesn't pay attention, that they say, you know, well, we don't really care what a journalist has to say about this. The counter argument is that, like I said, we have this epidemic. What I didn't say is it's extraordinarily expensive. 1 in every 4 health dollars spent in America is spent on diabetes and its complications, over $1 billion a day.
Where is all the money going? $400 billion a year on the cost of the diabetes epidemic.
Can I tell you a story?
Sure.
The one that sort of crystallized everything for me. This was a chef who became a journalist. He was diagnosed about 8 years ago, 7, 8 years ago, with type 1 diabetes. And like anyone who's diagnosed with a chronic disease or a disease, he's got no preconceptions. He's suddenly thrown into this world of diabetes, and he's being educated by his physician, who wants to give him the best possible care. And his physician says to him, look, you've got this disorder. where you can no longer metabolize the carbohydrate content of the diet safely because you don't make enough insulin anymore. So we're going to give you insulin therapy. We're going to tell you to eat a set amount of carbohydrates every day at every meal and at snacks, and then we're going to give you insulin therapy to control your blood sugar, which got to cover the carbohydrates. And this fellow says to his doctor, well, wait a minute, wait, what you're saying is because of my disease, carbohydrates are now poison to me, and I should eat the poison and take the antidote. Why don't I just not eat the poison? And he said his doctor, you know, never sort of thought of it. The doctor just wanted to make him better. This young man just wanted to be as healthy as possible. That's the sort of trade-off we're talking about. The conventional thinking that the diabetes community never tested, they just kind of grandfathered in, is eat the poison, take the antidote. We've got you covered. And if the antidote has side effects or eating the poison has side effects, we've got antidotes for those. Or just don't eat the poison.
What would you say to someone listening who perhaps has diabetes or knows someone who does have it? Obviously, you'd want them to read your book, but what would be some of the steps they might consider taking?
Talk to their physician and their diabetes educator, their endocrinologist, depending on who they're seeing, about this alternative approach. If their physician doesn't understand it, try to convince them to do the necessary reading to do it. The world is full now of these sort of low carbohydrate. When people talk about keto diets or Atkins, it's ultimately the kind of dietary approach that we're talking about. We're still living in a sort of 1960s level discussion about these disorders when significant amounts of research have been done showing the effects. So ideally, try to get your physicians to make the effort to understand this. And that would be, I hate to say this, buying my book and giving it to your doctor, because they're the ones who really need it. And once they understand it, then they can help their patients.
The book is Rethinking Diabetes, What Science Reveals About Diet, Insulin, and Successful Treatments. And the author is Gary Taubes. Gary, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
If you only have a 401k, you're not getting the most for retirement.
Wait, what?
Add a Robinhood IRA on top, then they'll boost it by 3%.
You can do that?
And if you transfer in any retirement account, you get 3% on top of that.
Is there a limit to the match?
No limit. Robinhood Gold gets you the biggest contribution match of any IRA on the market. Sign up for Robinhood Gold at Robinhood.com/boost by April 30th. Subscription fees apply.
Investing involves risk. 3% match requires gold for 1 year from first match. Must keep IRA for 5 years. Match on transfers subject to additional terms and conditions. Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC.
At Progressive, we love sports and saving you money, so we bundled them together.
The final horse now in the gate, and they're off. They're starting off with a double toe loop jump, leaving a difficult 7-10 split as there's movement on the inside rail. Only 9 pins separate them now as they head to the final quarter mile. They're neck and neck. It's down to the last frame. Here comes the actual jump. They bundle their home and auto insurance with Progressive. Win, strike, savings, gold.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Not available in all states or situations.
Artificial intelligence is changing the way we get many things done, including financial planning, budgeting your spending, and much more. InfoTrack's Roy Mackey spoke with an expert to learn about it. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. James Royal is an analyst at Bankrate.com. James, ChatGPT and other AIs are being tried out for virtually anything and everything these days. How well does it do in the area of financial planning and management?
Well, one of the great things about AI and ChatGPT in particular is you can ask it any kind of thing about your finances, and it can help you manage that, whether that's paying down debt, building a schedule to pay down your debt, saving money, analyzing your finances and building a budget, or my personal favorite, building a wealth plan for you based on your assets and income and the amount of money that you want to accumulate. And so I think it's a great thing for allowing people to plan their finance, but it's not without some downsides.
I was just going to ask, what are the biggest weaknesses that ChatGPT or other AIs may have in terms of financial planning?
Well, one is really kind of a structural nature due to the AI. It's not always 100% reliable. It can sometimes just create sources out of thin air, and create nonsensical answers. And that's why if you're receiving this advice, you really want to be careful and understand how it fits your needs and how the strategies that it's proposing really make sense and fit your overall financial circumstances. That's the first issue. Another real issue, though, is that unlike a human advisor, it's not going to be there during the tough times. And so there's a question of motivation. When times get tough, the market goes down, or you're not able to contribute and pay down your debt, something like that, the AI is not going to hold your hand and say, well, it's going to be better and you need to just move on through this situation and keep with a long-term investment plan. And that's where a human advisor is really beneficial, because that advisor is going to say, hey, look, this is the long-term plan for building wealth. Keep going and maintaining that motivation.
Let's say someone wanted to use ChatGPT for some advice on retirement planning. Are there privacy and online security concerns in regards to discussing your finances with an artificial intelligence?
Well, certainly a lot of this information becomes public domain. That's the wrong term, but just the sense of it could be publicly accessible. So if you're using account numbers and things like that, you want to be careful, but sort of generic financial information won't be a dangerous thing to use. But you really want to be careful about your private and personal information.
Can you just list maybe the top two or three things that you think the average person could really use AI for on their finances?
One of the biggest is just building a wealth plan that works for you, whether that's paying down debt, saving, and investing. So coming up with a way to accumulate wealth, build wealth, for example, through the stock market. And AI can even help you select securities. But the big thing is you want to understand how that fits into your financial plan, why those securities fit or not. And it's just an AI. And so who's going to stand behind those recommendations? But that, in large strokes, is the key thing, is building wealth. And it can help you do that. You can really ask questions in normal everyday language, normal speaking language, and come up with a solution. So I think anything around those financial issues is really accessible for somebody using AI.
I think anyone who's tried out ChatGPT or any of these other AIs has kind of come to the conclusion that one of the keys to using it is in asking the right questions and then sometimes fine-tuning them. What advice would you offer to someone who maybe wants to dip their toe in the water in terms of using it for personal finance management?
That's a great point. And sometimes you get asked the wrong question and you get a response that it's clear the AI didn't understand the question. So you really want to be careful about how you phrase that question, even if you're using that natural language. But you want to be careful that the answer is actually answering the question that you've asked. And again, what I've been warning here about the answers that you get from AI, understanding those answers that you get and why they make sense is really critical, because AI can pull sources, create sources, what experts call hallucinations, out of whole cloth, it may create nonsensical answers. And so you do really want to make sure that you're understanding those answers that it's giving you and how, for example, an investment security works for your own circumstances.
James Royal, analyst at Bankrate.com. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That's it for another edition of InfoTrack. Thanks to this week's contributors, Roy Mackey and Gina Tedesco. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Identify yourself.
WCFW-FM and WCFW-HD1, Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the entire Chippewa Valley.
Pacific Media Radio Station.
FM has always stood for fine music. And now, FM stands for fun music, too. This is the Valley's fun music. 105.7.
CFW. Chippewa Valley.
Thank you.
Sometimes I feel like I don't have a partner. Sometimes I feel like my only friend is the city I live in, the city of angels. Lonely as I am, together we cry. I drive on the streets 'cause she's my companion. I walk through the hills 'cause she knows who I am. She sees my good deeds and she kisses the wind. And I never worry, now that is a lie. I don't ever wanna feel like I did that day. Take me to the place.
We've got some big shoes to fill, don't we? Well, if you've been around a while, you know how important the letters WCFW have been to Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the entire valley. FM has always stood for fine music. Well, we've put a new paint job on things and couldn't be more excited to have been handed the torch, where FM still stands for fine music, but also fun music. Proud to say that we're still 105.7 CFW.
Chippewa Valley weather.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some fog and some clouds to begin your day. Eventually, skies turning partly cloudy. Our highs reaching the upper 40s. In the overnight, upper 20s and mostly clear skies. On Monday, we'll see more clouds on the way. Upper 40s in the late afternoon. Right now, it's 22.
CFW.
Everybody needs a little time away. I heard her say from each other. Even lovers need a holiday. Far away from each other. It's hard for me to say I'm sorry. I just want you to stay. After all that we've been through, I will make it up to you. I promise to. And after all that's been said, just a part of me I can't let go. Couldn't stand to be kept away just for the day.
Five seven CFW.